Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom on the program tonight. New satellite imagery shows the Chinese constructing a subterranean complex in Aksai Chin. While that is about 60 kilometers from the line of actual control, the scale of the construction is staggering. At least 10 tunnel entrances are clearly visible. We'll be bringing you our special report and then, with the help of some of the finest analysts, explaining the implications of this, including with the former Northern Command Chief, General Huda. Also on the show tonight, after Chandrayaan, which continues to do brilliantly on the surface of the moon, with the Pragyan rover taking pictures of the Vikram lander, it's time to focus on the next big launch. That comes up on Saturday morning with the Aditya mission set to blast off. What is the Aditya mission? Why is the sun ISRO's big new focus? There's a chance for some really exciting science, and we'll be bringing you details of all that the next big Indian space mission has to offer. And that's just coming up a few days away. Well, 60 kilometers east of the Debsang Plains in northern Ladakh, Chinese forces have begun carving tunnels and shafts, as we will show you, into a hillside along a narrow river valley. An image of that you can see behind me. Why? To construct multiple reinforced shelters and bunkers for soldiers and weaponry. The site identified in this report lies in Aksai Chin, that is Indian territory, but it lies east of the line of actual control. That is territory being illegally held by China. So let's first bring you the location. Now, the location of the site where China is digging into hillsides to create a giant subterranean military complex there on your screen. It is in Aksai Chin. Look at the map on your left. It lies about 60 kilometers to the east of the line of actual control. The map on your right gives you an idea of where in India it actually is. Now, the image you see here shows a location in the valley, which I identified, where we've circled four clear tunnel entrances. And we'll show you many more of these, the Chinese cutting in to the rock face. The image of another location at this complex shows perhaps the clearest images of the tunnel. As you can see, there are two distinct entrances at this location. There are also reinforced personnel bunkers over here. We have marked that. Entry and exit routes have a distinctive fork shape to dissipate the impact of bombardment. The entry and exit routes marked on the right of this image. So the big question is this, and we'll show you more images soon. Why is China doing this? Now, we've spoken to leading satellite imagery analysts from around the world, China experts. Here's what they have to say. By establishing underground facilities and developing subterranean infrastructure in such proximity to the border, Chinese strategists seem to be aiming to counterbalance the current advantage held by the Indian Air Force. That's what Damien Simon, a leading satellite imagery expert, has to say. It is clear that China is hardening its military presence in Ladakh against possible artillery and airstrikes in the event of a full-scale military escalation. That's what SIMTAC, the chief military analyst at Force Analysis, says. One more reaction. China's creation of permanent bunkers and other fortifications in Aksai Chin meshes with its border intransigence, with no sign that it is willing to climb down to some extent to end the extended military standoff with India, says Brahma Chalani. But what we can now actually do is bring you more detailed images of what we are talking about. First up, here are images of several structures built in the area in addition to the tunnels that we've described. So there are literally dozens of structures, not just the subterranean component that we spoke about, but also dozens of structures built above the land. And this image that we can now show you also shows a military township almost being developed. It's almost an L shape along this gigantic river valley. And there are multiple structures, and as we've mentioned to you, and this is the big story, at least 10 tunnel entrances either constructed or being constructed, which is why this represents a new and present threat. Now, the entire issue of Aksai Chin, where this site is located, and the river valley I was referring to is what is actually the image behind me. The issue of Aksai Chin again came up in the last 48 hours with China releasing the latest edition of its so-called standard map, which includes all of Aksai Chin and Arunachal Pradesh as part of its territory. In an exclusive interview to NDTV's Sanjay Pugalia yesterday, the Foreign Minister of India, Dr. S. Jaishankar, rubbished those claims, which he said were a repeat of what Beijing has been saying in the past as well.
China has even in the past put out maps which claim the territories which are not China's, which belong to other countries. This is an old habit of theirs. It is not something which is new. It started in the 1950s. So just by putting out a map claiming territories, some of which are part of India, doesn't make that. I mean, these are very much part of India. So I would say, but I would not relate the two countries. I think we are very clear. We are very clear what our territories are. This government is very clear about what we need to defend our territories. You can already see that on our borders. So I think there should be no doubt about that. Just making absurd claims doesn't make other people's territory yours. Let me be very clear on that.
Well, joining us now, Lieutenant General D.S. Sura, the former Northern Army commander, and one of the finest Indian military minds that I've interacted with. Thanks so very much for being with us. So, General, I thought, I'd go through these images possibly one by one with you, get your reaction. So let's show our viewers the first image. Let's have that up full screen if we can. This is one of the images which we were able to actually highlight. It shows four specific tunnel entrances or exits. We located more than 10 of them at this particular site. The site itself is huge, but this is four in relatively close proximity at one of those locations. So, General, what does digging into a hillside imply for us? Why is China doing this?
Vishnu, always a pleasure to be on your program. Before I come to the specific Aksai Chin location, Vishnu, I think it's good to put in perspective what China has been doing as far as military infrastructure development in Tibet and Xinjiang is concerned. And I think that will, give a sort of a complete picture. So the developments started post-Doklam in 2017 and actually got speeded up after 2020, after the LAC standoff in eastern Ladakh. There are two aims, of what the PLA is doing. One is to reduce their vulnerabilities. As you assured, some people have mentioned that, the Indian Air Force has a tremendous advantage in air operations over Tibet. And the Chinese air infrastructure, the airfields were limited. In fact, it was a surprise that they didn't even have, hardened shelters for their fighter aircraft. That has significantly changed. Every airfield has got improved. The runways have got lengthened. Dual runways have come up. Mm-hmm. Hardened shelters have come up. Air defense has come up in a big way. So the first thing that the Chinese are trying to do is reduce their vulnerability. And the second thing that they're doing is building infrastructure to speed up offensive operations across the LAC. And you see that in construction of new roads. Eight roads leading to the LAC have got developed in eastern Ladakh. Bridges have come up over Pengong. So high-speed railway lines, Lhasa to Nimchi, have come up. So the dual aim, one, reduce their vulnerabilities, and second, improve their ability to conduct offensive operations. And what we are seeing in Aksai Chin and the images that you showed, again, has a dual purpose. One is reduce their vulnerabilities, particularly high-end assets, missile launchers, air defense systems that can tuck into these tunnels. And so are protected from airstrikes and long-range artillery. And second is the way the infrastructure is coming up in Aksai Chin. Obviously, they are looking at this area as something which is of strategic importance. There is a vulnerability, Indian vulnerability here. So, building up troops in order to have more forces quickly available for operations in case, it ever happens.
What we can do actually, General, is pull out an image of 2 years back of a part of this river valley, compare it with what is happening now. So let's have that up full screen so that I can just go through this. Now, the image on the top and, for our viewers, just if you get onto ndtv.com, you'll get high resolution images. We are broadcasting on standard definition, but the high resolution images really do tell a story. So what you see actually on top is that same river valley where there's minimal construction. In fact, in most places there isn't. But now focus on the image below, and that's an image of 2023. The image on the top is from 2021. Now in 2 years, the Chinese have revamped this area to, I mean, you could easily use the word township, and that doesn't include the tunneled areas. So General, my next question to you is this. You were talking about China's infrastructure development. I think one of the most concerning aspects is the pace of infrastructure development. I don't think any country anywhere in the world has seen that.
Absolutely, Vishnu. I mean, you have to admit that the pace at which they develop the infrastructure is frankly astounding. I mean, the manner in which they do it, they do have an advantage, as compared to India, because the area that's opposite the LAC, particularly in East Ladakh, is plain. And so construction is that much easier. But despite that, the pace at which they built the bridge over Pengongso Lake, first a temporary bridge and now, a parallel permanent bridge, the pace at which roads are getting constructed, I think you have also in the past shown satellite imagery of other areas where yes. infrastructure development has come up so very quickly that, it amazes us. Galwan River Valley, for example, across the LAC, there was absolutely nothing prior to 2020. And now you see massive developments taking place, shelters, gun areas, etc. have come up. So really, it is. I mean, to give the devil his due, the construction that they do is very impressive.
General, does terrain favor them in the areas of Aksai Chin that we're talking about, which lie parallel to Daulat Beg, Oldi, and Depsang? In other words, go ahead, sir.
It does, Vishnu, because you see, they have a highway running, right across, coming from Xinjiang into Tibet, and now they're developing another highway. And from here, the area is fairly flat and plain, although it's high altitude. They have made a number of roads coming across the LAC. For us, actually, the area of DBO lies at the end of a very long and tenuous road, that is the DS-DBO road. So that's the only single road which leads into this area of subsector north. We are trying to build another access over Sasirla, which will provide an alternative, but that is likely to take time. So in terms of particularly, we talk about the Depsang Plain, there is a huge sort of terrain advantage. There is an advantage in how quickly they can build up forces vis-a-vis how we can build up forces.
Okay, General, so let's play out one more image for our viewers. Let's change and then just bring you this close-up image, which is, fairly remarkable. Let's have that up full screen for our viewers. Now, this actually is one particular site which has got two entries. If we go back to the previous image, I wanted to refer... So if you just look at this image, this has two tunnel entrances very clearly marked out over there. And these are broad tunnel areas, again, carving into the hillside. General, is it your sense on the basis of what you're seeing that this is more than just tunnels to protect their soldiers and their weaponry, that this is some sort of a subterranean command and control center?
It could well be... Vishnu, so we have seen in areas, across the LAC, even in the past, that when they come in and they have deployment of large forces, they do carry out this tunneling, in order to improve their survivability. I would think the tunnels would not be so much for troops as some high-end, military equipment that could come in. So you could see, for example, missile launchers, as I said, air defense systems, command control centers that would come in because they would obviously want to protect their communications and command control. So it's quite likely that, this is high value assets that are going to go into these tunnels.
Does this mean, General, that despite whatever talks are continuing, the Chinese are here to stay? This is a facility that would cost billions of dollars. I mean, it's quite clear. You can't dig in tunnels into 10 plus areas, construct a military township, build roads, etc., etc. unless you intend to stay put over there. So in as much as we talk about de-escalation, is it time for us as a nation to understand that de-escalation beyond a point is not going to happen?
Absolutely, Vishnu. And I've said this in the past that, we keep talking about status quo ante. I think we need to be realistic enough to understand that there is not going to be any status quo ante. And that the additional troops that have come in, all of them are not going to go back. So you're going to find what I could call a hardened LAC. You're going to find additional troops on both sides of the LAC. And that in itself, the cause of tension that could happen. And if you combine it with the fact that confidence building measures, protocols have broken down, I think we are looking at what I think the army chief called an unpredictable sort of situation along the LAC. I do not see all these positions that have come up now being completely vacated by the PLA.
All right, General Huda, thank you very much for sharing your concerns and sharing your thoughts. We're joined at this stage by Ambassador Bhashwati Mukherjee, Don McLean Gill, a geopolitical analyst and lecturer at the Department of International Studies at De La Salle University, and Sameer Joshi. Sameer, to you first, do you believe that the Chinese are required to actually dig into a hillside now, because with extended range Indian artillery being increasingly available, quite besides missile systems like the BrahMos, the Pralay, and other systems, they're doing this to protect their weapons and their soldiers?
Yeah, pretty much, Vishnu. Also in line with what the General Huda just said, they're exposed, their vulnerabilities and the fact that they want to maintain a combat force advantage over us. They're forced to move a large number of troops to areas which are very close to the border. What you're seeing in Daebsang is something which has been replicated back, adjacent to Arunachal and other areas. And to maintain their superiority, numerical superiority over the increased Indian buildup, the Chinese have also been forced to kind of, push in more troops. Now, these troops will naturally require new housing, better fort protection, better troop movement, so widening of the roads. Generally, the Chinese have very minimal presence near the borders, and they have a larger depth presence in the depth. But with the increased fire vectors, which the Indians have deployed, the Indian Air Force, along with the Indian Army, all this has now come into vulnerable areas. And this is a major headache for them. It is, the construction of these bunkers, it's very clear they have been forced to take these measures where they are in the zone where the vulnerability is exposed. The, the tunnels in the mountains are very interesting. When you take a look at them, not only are they forced to kind of, protect a lot of vulnerable vehicles, this also indicates to us that the kind of weaponry and, the machinery which they are pushing into the areas is a level higher than what, generally they have used in the past. Mm-hmm. That means they are also pushing in a lot of fire vectors, which naturally need to be protected from the offensive fire vectors from the Indian side. So this is the reason why, especially in a very core area in the Daebsang Plains, and Daebsang Plains is very important to both sides. For us, it is important because the Durbok Shyog Daulatbeg Oldies road is there, which is a lifeline to the Karakoram Pass and Siachen to the other side. But to the Chinese, it is even more, kind of important. Remember, this is one area where the Indian Army and its offensive forces positioned adjacent to Daebsang have a clear maneuver area around 2-3 different axes towards the Gulf 219, which is the highway which China very much wants to protect. So this is a core area where not only it is worried about the defensive side, it is also the area where we might see the Chinese come up and take offensive action in case of, hostilities in the future.
Ambassador Mukherjee, as you see these images, how would you look at this from a diplomatic standpoint? We've had 19 rounds of talks, military talks with the Chinese. We've had, a conversation between President Xi and the Prime Minister at BRICS a couple of days back. They're going to be over here for G20 as well. And yet this is what they are doing. I mean, does it not appear that their intention is anything other? Is essentially not to talk. I mean, the talks are just a facade, essentially.
The talks, Vishnu, have been a facade for a long time. But both sides were aware that it's necessary to keep talking, to keep temperatures down. But things changed, as you know, once Xi Jinping took over. He actually raised the temperature on one side and tried to intimidate us. And instead of getting intimidated, we beefed up, as General Huda said. We were able to, in fact, have a strategic advantage over them as far as Indian Air Force, etc. are concerned. And for the first time, we didn't back off. We built our infrastructure all the way up to the LAC, which had not been done in the past by previous government. So this was a major change on our side. And as a diplomat, I would say that this is giving a very strange signal. We don't know if Xi Jinping is actually coming or not. The chances are he is coming because the Chinese, according to media reports, are bringing a 45-car convoy from Beijing. That's certainly not going to be for any minor player. He would not like India to have all the glory of the G20 summit without him trying to muscle in and trying to spoil the summit document for us, for instance, on the Russia-Ukraine peace, etc., because he knows that Putin is not coming, Lavrov is coming. So what would an Indian strategic thinker or a diplomat think while looking at these images? It would say, A, that Xi Jinping is trying once again to intimidate us. B, is trying to warn us, don't think that by getting into the American embrace, you are safe. Because when push comes to shove, you'll be alone facing us on the LOC, just as you were in 1962 and all the way from 1962 to 2023. And thirdly, it is a clear indication that if you think, India, that the balance of power in the region is slowly shifting in your favor, forget it. We are doing everything possible to intimidate you, to dig in, to bring in heavy artillery. And let's face it, Vishnu, that for the moment, they have an asymmetrical advantage over us in conventional terms, which is leveled out because of the terrain, because of the fact that their air defenses go all the way back to Tibet. They have a problem of refueling. The Indian Air Force does not have that. No matter how much they try, we have strategic advantages here, which they don't have. So this is a clear sign. We are not backing off. And be ready for a major confrontation if you go the way you're going. And which way are we going? We are going the way of strategic autonomy. We have decided that we are not going to allow them to walk all over us, or to threaten us, or to intimidate us. And the false map that Dr. Jaishankar explained yesterday on your channel is absolutely correct. They've been playing this game right from 1955. But to have the audacity to bring out these maps just a few days before the G20 summit, when the international media drives the speculation as to whether Xi Jinping is going to come or not come to Delhi, is again a clear signal that don't think this business as usual. We believe that Arunachal Pradesh is Eastern Tibet. We are going to do everything possible to get Arunachal Pradesh, which right. means that he is trying to intimidate India and to intimidate India's leadership on the eve of the G20 summit. That's not going to work.
Right.
But it's going to look as if the Chinese are bullying us, trying to bully us.
Okay, I just wanted to, ma'am, just to keep the strike rotating, wanted to go across to Professor Gill. You know, just to follow up on what Ambassador Mukherjee actually had to say, we've had BRICS just a few days back. We've got G20, which is very much the world's focus, coming up in a few days. They release a map knowing that there are huge differences. They unilaterally claim parts of our territory. And it's quite clear that throughout this entire process, they've been building up substantially. Is there a message that the Chinese were actually trying to say by releasing this map just ahead of G20?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Mr. Vishnu, and I completely agree with Ambassador Mukherjee. Looking at it from a foreign policy analysis angle, you know, Beijing's foreign policy lies greatly in the power of hyper-nationalism. In fact, China continues domestic security threats to be much more controversial than the external security threats. So, of course, these assertive maneuvers continuously sort of provide Beijing with a cushion that its domestic perception, that its image at home remains strong. And that is, of course, the prerequisite for a strong seat at power. And this is why I also agree with General Huda that this is also one of the reasons why China may not seem to be backing down or willing to be disengaging along the LAC. Now, of course, if you look at it throughout the broader context, right, China is trying to internationalize what its general, General Zhang, some few years back calls the cabbage strategy, right? We call it salami slicing as well. This is primarily for the South China Sea and the East China Sea to be able to provoke and at the same time try to alter the status quo through narratives by falling short of a shooting war. Now, this has been quite successful in the South China Sea and the East China Sea, but China continues to face challenges with India, given, of course, India's expanding military capabilities, its increasing defense network, and, of course, its legitimate image as a responsible security and development partner throughout the world. And, okay, of course, this is where China tries to come into play.
Sameer, how does India target a complex like this?
Yeah, so, you know, had you asked this question about 15 years back, this would have been one of the life mysteries, simply because there were no assets in the, you know, Indian arsenal at that time to engage such events. But over a period of time, and, you know, no less triggered by the threat which China poses, the Indian Air Force and the Indian Army have equipped themselves with, you know, munitions and arsenal, which can definitely engage them. You know, every aircraft, in fact, most of the aircraft which you will see operating in the JNK area, as well as the Ladakh zones and adjacent to Arunachal, are able to launch standoff missiles or standoff weapons, which may be glide bombs or, you know, laser-guided bombs of some variety. Now, this is, you must give credit to the Indian Air Force that this arsenal has been built, which is sufficient enough to, you know, match the weapon to the target and kind of threaten all, you know, envisaged targets in a region which is right up till about 100 kilometers from the line of actual controls. Now, this is where, you know, the second layer of overlapping firepower, which the Indian Army has added over the years, especially after the mobilization because of the Chinese threat post the Galwan event, which is creating further worries for the Chinese. You know, the Indian Army, to give credit to them again, has moved a lot of firepower. Even if you see the Debson playing area, you know, it has taken humongous effort to overlay that area with, you know, assets which can create long-range fires for the Indian Army. Mm-hmm. These include tubed artillery of 155 millimeter and above, as well as the rocket artillery, which are both indigenous, as well as what we have got from the Russians. So if you say, you know, the Chinese are vulnerable, yes, they are definitely vulnerable, not only from one single source, but from multiple long-range fires, which are kind of, you know, overlapping with each other. This is the new normal for the Chinese, and they have to live with it, since they are majorly involved in this game which they are playing with India.
Ambassador Mukherjee, with all of this military construction underway, the fact that the Chinese continue to squat on our territory in multiple areas, is it your concern that within a finite period of time, whether it's possibly years, you know, there may well be conflict between the two nuclear powers, and that it to right-size a conflict, it's impossible. You know, I mean, we've got video imagery of the fights between our soldiers in Galwan and of course, Tawang, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't limit it to that always. And to hope that you can is perhaps hoping for too much. The real worry is a war.
The real worry is to be prepared when that war comes, fully prepared, so that we can finally take revenge for 1962. Because surely that war will come. We cannot postpone it forever. And secondly, it is very, very important to remember, Vishnu, that it may not be a nuclear conflagration, because that would be as disastrous for the Chinese as it would be for the Indian side. If it is to be fought as a conventional war, we can fight and we can win, provided we continue to do what we are doing, which is beef up the infrastructure, not blink first, not give up territory while negotiating with them in good faith, as we've done in the past. That was not something that we should have done, actually. Looking back, we should have hung on to the strategic advantages that our troops had got for us, and we should never make that mistake again. We should understand that if there is withdrawal, it should be simultaneous, or they should withdraw first. Because we are gentlemen, we keep our word of honor, they don't. But yes, surely, Vishnu, that the time will come when that conflict will come, because as I have frequently written and blogged, clearly the dragon cannot dance with the elephant. So either the dragon keeps a safe distance from the elephant, or surely there will be conflict. And it doesn't seem to me from your map that the dragon is keeping any safe distance from the elephant at all.
Look, I'd like to thank you for ominous words, but I share your concerns and I agree with you entirely, Ambassador. I think we all do, and it is a real worry that we need to be alert and aware of where this is potentially headed. The Chinese aren't building up in this manner just for the sake of it. It is important for India to devise a strategy which takes into account these developments. There's a lot of work that needs to be done and we need to be prepared. I'd like to take a short break, turn to something with a lot more hope. And that, of course, is the next big ISRO mission, the Aditya mission. It's a mission to study about the sun. It's a full-fledged observatory that we are putting up in space. We'll be talking about that coming up. Welcome back to Left, Right and Center after Chandrayaan, which continues to do brilliantly on the surface of the moon with the Pragyan rover taking pictures of the Vikram lander. It's time to focus on the next big launch that comes up on Saturday morning with the Aditya mission set to blast off. What is the Aditya mission? Why is the sun ISRO's big focus? There is a chance, and this is why we are discussing this, for some really exciting science. And we'll be sharing all of those details. But remember, Saturday morning before, at about 11 or a little after that, is when the PSLV rocket with Aditya blasts off. So, some details. The moon done, now the sun. What is Aditya L1? It is India's first mission to the sun. It's a 400 crore rupee project for a 1500 kilogram robotic satellite to study the sun. Aditya will look out for solar storms and solar flares. It'll study the sun from a distance of 1.5 million kilometers. It'll be placed in the sun's halo orbit at Lagrange point L1. So L1 actually stands for Lagrange point. And we'll talk about what that means. Aditya will delve deeper into less studied solar science. It'll observe the sun's photosphere, the chromosphere and the corona. It'll study how the sun's coronal heating works. It'll identify how solar eruptive events happen. It'll study solar, wind, space, weather. Well, joining us now, Narendra Bhandari, the space scientist, and Dipankar Banerjee, director of the Aryabhatta Research Institute of Observational Scientists. I think, Mr. Banerjee, what is interesting is that it's not just a satellite. It's a full-fledged space facility, which is actually doing a lot more than just what a satellite does. It is an observatory class vehicle, isn't that right? So it's a big difference.
That's absolutely right. So it's called the observatory class mission. So we have observatory in the ground, and for 100 years we have been looking at the sun from different observatories in India, namely the Kodaikanal Observatory or the Udaipur Solar Observatory or say Aryabhatta Research Institute at Nainital. But this is a grand opportunity for the Indian solar community. First time we are able to go to space. And normally, you know, the space agencies try out with the small satellite program and near Earth, missions. But we are so lucky that ISRO has given us this huge opportunity to go to Lagrange 1 point. And as you mentioned, Lagrange 1 point is 1.5 million kilometers away from the Earth. And it is a perfect vantage point to look at the sun continuously. So it allows us to, you know, really study the sun for a longer period. Because once you reach Lagrange point, it is also expected that the satellite will live much longer. Because satellite needs only very little fuel to maintain its orbit around the Lagrange 1 point. So we'll be actually making a big halo orbit around this Lagrange 1 point, and we'll be continuously looking at the sun. And then this is again a huge opportunity. From that space platform, we are going to look at the sun and we will have a combination of instruments we call remote sensing and in situ. Remote sensing means we have certain telescopes will be remotely looking at the sun and will be recording the images and the particles which are coming from the sun and will sense and try to get an estimate about the temperature, about the pressure, about the density of the different layers in the solar atmosphere and study all these, you know, you mentioned these dynamic events which happens in the solar atmosphere, namely the solar flares or the huge ejecta which comes called coronal mass ejections. So these are these four, remote sensing instruments. Again, the interesting thing is we are going to have multi-wavelength suite of instruments. We have optical, we have infrared, we have near UV, we have X-ray. So that means you are able to probe different temperature layers of the atmosphere of the sun with this multi-wavelength remote sensing telescope. And in addition, we'll also have in-situ instruments. The particles, the mass which is coming from the sun, it is traveling through this interplanetary space. And eventually, it will come to near Earth. And the Earth near environment is filled with now space assets. You know, we have plenty of satellites. Sure. We are now thinking of even in future go to the moon. So all these can be directly affected by the solar energetic particles. And
okay, I'm going to come back to you in just a moment. Go across to Pallav Bagla, who joins us at this stage. Pallav, let's start at the very beginning, the rocket itself. We are talking about the sun already. Tell us about the rocket first.
Oh, we have a magnificent rocket which will take India's solar observatory to the point where it should. India is using the Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle, which is our workhorse rocket. It has an excellent record. And on Saturday, the launch should be good. And this is not a very heavy satellite, and that's why they are using a rocket which will take it as good as an orbit they want. And the Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle has really done remarkably well in the past. If the satellite were heavier, they would have used the Launch Vehicle Mark III. But the Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle will do its job well. It has to finally go and settle 1.5 million kilometers away, but that the satellite will do.
Okay. Mr. Bhandari, what is India trying to do with the data that we collect over here? Are we looking to get data to prove certain theories, or is this pure science?
You see, sun is a very mysterious object. It's a sphere of gas, and one would expect that it is all mixed up, but that is not true. It has a layered structure. So we have a photosphere, we have chromosphere and corona. And one of the mysteries about it is that corona has a very high temperature, higher than the chromosphere. So how does it happen that we don't understand fully? There are some theories which Aditya 1 will try to prove. And how this mass ejection, you know, they are so big, sometimes as big as the size of the Earth. They come and engulf the whole Earth. They keep on moving in the interplanetary space. How they are produced, we don't understand about their origin. So these are the main objectives to study chromosphere and corona and the mass ejections, how they take place, how they originate. And this is all the play of plasma and the magnets. The sun has a very high magnetic field, and that is what is playing a very important role. So we want to understand that. And of course, Aditya has another objective to study the plasma in the vicinity of the Earth. You know, 1.5 million kilometers is not that far. Sun is about 150 million kilometers away. So it is actually nearby. But what particles come as solar wind? You see, there are solar wind, there are solar flares, which come occasionally, and solar wind is continuously flowing in. Mm-hmm. 1 million particles per square centimeter per second. Every second, so many particles come. So how do they come? How they change with the solar cycle? All this is a scientific study of great value. And with Aditya mission, we hope to resolve some of the problems and understand the basic science behind these phenomena, which are very mysterious.
Professor Raju, you know, it's going to be quite complicated in terms of where we want to position the Aditya probe. It's going to be at the Lagrange point. That's what L1 stands for. For the benefit of our viewers, how do we get there?
Oh, thank you, Vishnu Swam, for having me here. And it's tremendous, orbital dynamics have gone into this decision of the route. The ISRO has, considering the rocket that's being used, and then the mass it can lift off, and it has come out with a fantastic orbital route, and it has been proven time and again successful. We have seen from the Chandrayaan 1, 2, and 3, and of course the Mars mission. So it all boils down to the orbital dynamics and taking into account how we get the spacecraft or the rocket out of the gravity of the Earth and in the right direction, the right time, and then see that it gets captured in the next planetary object's gravity. But in this case here, it's a very interesting factor here in Lagrange point. There's no one, unlike the Moon or Mars, there is no orbit insertion here. Mm-hmm. So, there has been, an interesting estimate and calculations have been made. And again, when we say Lagrange point, it's not a point per se. It's a kind of a region wherein even once the satellite is placed there, it will be kind of, it's a halo orbit. It will be just, orbiting in a very, circular fashion in that region. So it's a tremendous, feat in terms of the mechanisms, in terms of the calculations and putting it there at the L1 point.
Okay. Pallav, has the ISRO team been able to get enough sleep for the mission? They've just started dealing with Chandrayaan. And Pragyan, the rover, keeps sending back all sorts of data. We're getting all sorts of pictures. We'll talk about that now. But, at the end of the day, they've got a finite number of engineers and scientists at that level. So they've got a lot of work this month, right?
Oh, certainly. It's relentless work for them. But fortunately, see, there are different teams which do it. There is a satellite team which did the Chandrayaan job, because the rocket job was done many, many weeks ago, July 14, that got over. Since then, the campaign for the PSLV launch for Aditya started. So there are different teams which do it. But yes, there are some overlaps. And like you, many people in ISRO have probably not slept for a long time. It's relentless work, Vishnu. And the Pragyan rover and the Vikram lander keep us busy throughout the day and night, because Pragyan and Vikram don't have sleep. They don't sleep. It's 14 days of continuous light. And now, after the moon embrace, it is going to be, like you said rightly, a sun dance. So moon walk to sun dance, and all happening within days. And let's not forget the significance of this. The moon mission happened when the Prime Minister was at BRICS, just a few days ahead of the G20. India is attempting sending the solar observatory, and I'm sure it's going to play out on the minds of the 40-plus leaders who turn up in New Delhi. So these are very significant milestones, sure, in India's journey, and all heading towards a developed nation soon.
No, interesting. Deepankar Banerjee, let's talk a little bit about the Pragyan rover, which has now gone and discovered sulfur on underneath the lunar surface. And not just that, many other chemicals as well. We've got a graphic, in fact, which we can play off that. So we'll do that. But just what is the significance of the discovery of sulfur?
Yeah, so people are looking at, all unknown elements. So this was not probably anticipated earlier that we'd be even seeing sulfur. So this particular instrument, which is this laser-induced spectroscopy instrument, which, bombards some laser into certain soil and then gets the reflected emission from that to get a feel about the composition of this. So I think, and that too, particularly in the, as you know, in the polar region, this has not been tested before. So the chemical composition of the polar region and its new element identification, different ionization states, different temperature sensitivities, all these are going to give a completely new picture. And of course, the final aim is to look for, water. So in a way, all these composition identification, new element identification will be quite crucial in the subsequent studies. So as you have projected here, Yes. This is the spectrum. And then in the spectrum, you see all these different elements which comes into the camera. Essentially, there is a CCD camera which is used for, all imaging. So here it is a spectra which is imaged from the reflected laser, beam. And these particular elements are identified from those, reflected light from those areas. So it's quite significant because we are for the first time getting new compositional, history.
Bring that graph back up, have it up full screen, and let's get Professor Raju to talk us through this. Professor, what are the various elements that we are able to find, or substances we are able to, minerals we are able to find on the surface of the moon? And what exactly are we looking at it over here from this sensor?
What it is showing is the kind of, again, I should say that this is a tweet that has come from ISRO. So whatever you are seeing is, that's the information I have. I don't have much further on this. But the way this works is, the laser light is sent out, and then and different elements have different, transition, different, ways in which the photons fall from one, energy state to another. And that's how you get the spectrum out of it. And in the similar fashion, there is another experiment called the alpha particle X-ray spectrometer. That also, it does it this in a different fashion and there also, a lot of element basically identify. It's a kind of fingerprinting in the sense that, in the atoms and molecules or elements, they have a particular energy levels, and you can really pinpoint that's it. But then the issue is that in terms of, there are multiple, in terms of compounds, there could be overlap of the lines. So sure, that's why, crucial analysis. I think this is, I believe this is a first.
No, absolutely. It's a lot of key analysis will
be shown by the, yeah, by the, by
we
the,
need to go into that. I'm only interrupting you now because I'm running short on time on this program. And I thought it would be interesting to actually end this program with a look at what, in the words of our foreign minister, several international leaders and countries are saying with regard to Chandrayaan. Let's take a look and wrap up this program. We'll be back tomorrow.